This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh and Giri Balakrishnan, who's guest hosting this week with us. It's the 26th of July, and we're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, news, and analysis.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we're all excited. It is a Thursday. We're looking forward to the weekend.
Very much.
Aren't we? I mean, who isn't? Who isn't looking forward
nice
to the weekend?
You
are. Okay. It is, of course, going to have a range of things happening this morning that will probably put a bit of cheer in you. Also a bit of a, bounce in your step. But I must say, when you look around the world, it's a bit of a grim day. It was a grim night for much of the world. In Syria, 200 people were killed in a series of deadly bombing attacks, and that was also replicated in Pakistan, that's facing an election. Dozens were killed yesterday on voting day. And also in Greece, they have had terrible forest fires.
Yeah, and there's a story in the BBC on, it's a really sad story on BBC on how an Irish man on honeymoon died in the Greek fire. The family has confirmed this, and they've asked for privacy. They've asked for the media and everyone to give them privacy. And they were in the forest, I think, when it happened. They were separated, the husband and wife, and yeah, they found out that he died in the fire.
Yeah, this has been quite a rampant thing in Greece. I think we've had quite a few of these forest fires, and quite a few people have also died. But this is really unfortunate circumstances for this married couple, or for anybody for that matter.
Actually, they were in a seaside resort.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I mean, the thing is, when you're faced with this kind of grim news, does it spoil your day? I mean, if you start off reading this as a front page, does it spoil your day?
Well, things happen. We have to get on with life, don't we, in one way or another. So,
well, bad things happen to other people.
No, well, it happens to everybody. A good thing is yin and yang. You know, it's a balance in life, isn't it? So we just got to deal with it and move on.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, if you see on the front pages, it's sad. And then sometimes people will say, oh, you know, sad news sells. But not so much, you know, it's a reality. It happens. And yeah, it's a sad thing, especially when you see so many people dying because of, in this case in Syria, it's because of war and bombings and all that. It's sad.
Right, because there was even more bad news related to the Toronto shooting. I think the Islamic State has come out to claim responsibility for that shooting. I'm looking around trying to find some happy news, and it's a bit tough this morning, and so what can I say? We have headlines like French gangster on the run evades police. Now that's not so happy. But okay, we'll try to bring you some happiness later on in the morning. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Pulp with Common People. Do you want to live with common people like me? Joyce Goh and Giri Balakrishnan, who's guest hosting, join me. Living with me, but they're at least joining me this morning as we bring you a range of interviews, news, and analysis. Now, not so common are people that work with Goldman Sachs, at least the upper echelons of Goldman Sachs, seen as the facilitators of the 1%. The incoming CEO, David Solomon, has an unusual hobby. He's a DJ by night.
Yeah, he's known as a DJ Diesel, and apparently he is quite very popular in the circles of DJing. People actually go and they like how he DJs and all. This is quite surprising for a bank CEO to be DJing, you know. So in this article, it points out that, you know, a good leader has hobbies. This is according to the author's opinion. And this so begs the question, you know, is it good for leaders to have a life or a hobby outside the job?
Well, why shouldn't they? I mean, you've got an intense job, whether it's an intense job or otherwise. You have a job, you've got to have a pastime as well. You've got to have some kind of hobbies to get you away from the drudgery of the same thing, you know, over and over again. So, for example, some people take up golf. Some people, like me, I take up writing. You know, for me, that gives me a sort of freedom from the normal drudgery of things.
Riding? As in riding motorbikes or horses?
Motorbikes.
Oh, motorbikes.
Well, okay. Mahathir rides horses.
Okay, so we do have hobbies, and I guess ordinary people have hobbies, but maybe the expectation is that if you are in high-powered positions, that you are too busy and you're obsessed by your own project, you think of an Elon Musk and so on. I mean, maybe his hobby is tweeting out nasty things to nice people, but whatever it is... The expectation is slightly different for those people than it is for the rest of us.
Hoi polloi. You mean like bosses you expect? I mean, there are bosses, not that you expect. There are people who are just, they're into their jobs 24/7. They're just working nonstop, you know, and they're traveling nonstop because of work. There are bosses also who expect their staff to be on the job 24/7. So you know, but I personally feel it's good to have a life outside work. And sometimes the lines may blur. You could be out, having fun, doing your hobby or whatever it is, but that is kind of linked to work as well. You know, it could be networking.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you know, people are being judged. Their competence in doing their job is judged by the hobby that they have. I think that you can't really make that comparison, can you? I might like playing marbles, you know, just because I'm the CEO of a investment bank doesn't mean to say I can't, you know, play marbles or
play marbles. I could just see play marbles. Though that's a hobby we associate with children, right? But I must say, I think there's an issue around the kind of hobby you have. So the fact that David Solomon has a hobby maybe is not so extraordinary, but the fact that he's a DJ, because that puts him in the cool category. Because if you look at him, he just looks like a slightly overnourished older banker. I mean, you know, they're not the most
playing
colorful.
Playing marbles is not cool?
No, playing marbles, it's not cool. Not in my book, but then my book's very narrow. So, okay, but being a DJ does come across as being cool. And I think maybe that's also something to be considered.
Yeah, and if you see the video, right, they have in this article, it shows a video of him with the headphones and he's on the DJ panel. That looks pretty cool. But it's definitely something different, a different hobby for anyone, not just a banker. This is a top banker, but just, you know, to have a hobby to DJ on the side is something quite unique.
So now I have to look for something cool to get involved in. What should I do?
Well, I would step away from the marbles, Giri. I would step away from the marbles and try something more adult. Okay, but, you know, say David Solomon painted, okay? He did watercolors. Would that really make it to a headline? You know, I mean, I have doubts about this story because I think it pivots on the fact that he's a DJ, and that's sort of out of his. He's not even. It's kind of out of his demographic. I mean, he does look like he's much, much older.
That's
than
true.
Your regular DJ.
He does. And also, actually, interesting that, you know, for DJs, right, they often work, as our producer points out, till 3, 4 a.m., so how does that impact his
work? I mean, does he get up in time to go to work? I mean, you know,
does he go straight to work right after?
Because you
spins?
Can play marbles at any time of the day, can't you, Giri?
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose so. You need to get at least 2 hours of sleep. Yeah, should be good enough. Yeah, well, it depends on whether he's on the bottle or he's just spinning the music. If he's spinning after playing the music, then I don't know how he's going to do his job as an investment banker. So I suppose that is a point to consider.
Or maybe he marries his job with his hobby, right? So you bring your clients to where you spin and then you do the deal.
And
so
we don't
knows?
Know if he's doing it every night. Yeah. So okay, tell us what you think. Do you think top CEOs should have a hobby, or should they be obsessed about making profits for their shareholders? BFM Radio, tweet us there or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Brian Adams with Summer of 69. I was born, actually, in the summer of 66. Well, actually, it was the winter of 66. But I like the idea that it was the summer, but it wasn't. It was January. Okay, I'm with Joyce Goh and guest hosting this morning, Giri Balakrishnan. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation and tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Actually, you were born in summer. Summer all year round.
It is true. It's summer in Malaysia. Yeah,
all year
that's
round.
Right. So 12 months of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I was born on a Sunday too. So that makes me a child of cheer, they say. Child of cheer.
Indeed.
Ah, Sunday, so that explains it.
Okay. Well, I am now, so in my 50s, and a lot of people think, you know, compared to millennials, my life should be winding down, and, you know, the things have passed me, the train has pulled out of the station. And that's often seen as, you know, and especially the entrepreneurial train, it's seen as something that only young people get on and, you know, they chug away. But now, a study suggesting very different results.
Yeah, so this the Census Bureau and two MIT professors conducted a study and discovered that the actual age at average startup founder was 45 years old. In fact, the best age to start up a business, the conclusion was that at 60 years old, which found that you actually have three times as likely to be successful as a 30-year-old startup founder, which is quite surprising given the digital era that we live in.
Because you know the things change about 60-year-olds, they come with full set of digits. Really, they do.
Well, when I read this article, I was, it is pretty surprising because you think that, you know, when you want to start a startup, you got to be young, you know, and even I myself find it like, oh, I do have a business idea, but I thought, you know, it's too late for me to start a business already because I've missed the train. Because you can see all these successful startup people, they're all young and they started when they were young. But this recent data shows that, yeah, if you're in your 40s and 50s, you know, it's not too late to start. And statistics show that actually older founders, startup founders, actually make it better than younger ones. And the reason behind this is because of experience.
Yeah, precisely. I don't know why both you and Shara think of missing your transport, missing your trains. But with age comes experience and knowledge of how to run or conduct a business or what is required to actually build it. Rather than at the age of 20 or 15 or 16 or whatever the age is that people start up their business at now.
Okay, so I think there are two things that were part of the assumption previously. One is energy.
Yeah.
The younger people have much more energy than just do a startup. You are working 24/7 mm-hmm. and you have to be obsessive and you need the energy to keep you and sustain you over the initial period, or however many years it is. Two, we see many of the new products as being linked to their generation. It's about young people. You know, the digital age is, you know, Gary just suggested, you know, it's like people most in touch with the digital age are those who actually grew up in it. But is that necessarily true? I mean, there are people like myself who are technological Luddites. We seem to be, you know, less, you know, willing to take up new technologies. But we weren't born without a brain. And and many of us, and maybe my peers more than myself, have really embraced the new technology. So it's not surprising, but that, I think, was the underlying assumption.
I think it's not so much that whether we were born with or without a brain, it's more the platform that we're using to do business. Previously, it was your brick-and-mortar kind of business. Now you have the digital platform. That digital platform necessarily means that the younger generation are the ones who are more used to how to use it and facilitate whatever needs to be done to do the business,
yes,
as opposed to the old school people.
Yeah, something that comes naturally to them. We feel that, right? And I know a startup founder, he's pretty young, successful, the business successful, and they travel so much. Like, he's flying to like 4 or 5 countries in a week. That's where the energy comes in, Shira. And not enough sleep. Sleep's like, what, 2-3? No. Okay, an average of 4 hours per week because of the traveling, going to different markets, trying to set up things. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I love the way Joyce tried to insinuate herself into our demographic, Giri. Now, it was like, she says.
Our demographic? I'm in my 50s, buddy.
Yeah. You're in late 40s. I think I could reveal that, you know. And you have enough gray in your on your top of your head to prove
those are
it
highlights.
Those are highlights. Okay, tell us what you think. If you're in your late 40s or 50s, do you think that you're poised to start a new business? Remember, you can always tweet us or you can WhatsApp us. Now, taking us to the first bulletin of the morning, Franz Ferdinand with a treason, animals. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Pink Floyd with Young Lust. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and guest hosting this morning, Giri Balakrishnan. We were talking earlier about some political violence in Pakistan, because they just had their polls. They had that terrible bombing in Balochistan, I think a couple of weeks ago now, claiming over 100 lives. But there's some good news on the horizon. Apparently, the cricket player turned politician, Imran Khan, is leading in the elections. It looks like he might take government. At this point in time, it's not clear whether he'll have a clear majority in the National Assembly, but expectations are that he could be the next Prime Minister of Pakistan.
We got some political news here too. The by-election in Sungai Kandis, which is going to be taking place, I think the nomination is, the polling date is on the 4th of August. So controversy here with 1,000 durians being offered or given out in the run-up to the election by Koprasi Warga Hijra Slango Berhad, or Co-Hijra. Now, this issue with the free giveaway of 1,000 durians is viewed upon or scowled upon by Bursay 2.0, Sharad.
Yeah. So let's just put this in context, right? The election period, the campaign period, rather, it runs from the 21st of July to the 3rd of August. Polling days on the 4th of August. This by-election was precipitated by the death, the untimely death of the PKR representative in the constituency. This event, which has banners with the face of the Mantri Basar, but also includes the candidate. Now, this, I think, is what raised flags, rather, for Bursay, that something was amiss.
Right, with the durians, you mean the posters with the durians, yeah. Well, Bursay 2.0 said that this creates a conflict of interest, as Co-Hijra is said to be a consolidation of microcredit programs under Selangor Menteri Bursar, which was officially launched in 2015 to enlarge the middle class in Selangor. So they're saying that there's a conflict of interest there, and whether or not, you know, using kind of like this event in favor, is that abusing a government machinery
let's put this in context, right? It's not so much the durians that are in contention.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
It is the fact that this state event seems to be promoting the candidate, right? And at a time. So the issue, I guess, for politicians, for those in power, is that even if this was a genuine event that was happening and had been scheduled long before, should they put it off until a time where it will not be looked upon as an attempt to bribe the voter, you know, give...
With durians?
With durians, whatever it is, because durians cost money, right? So the idea is that this is an unfair advantage the government of the day is using for its candidate.
It's pushing it a bit, I think, with the durians. I mean, how heady are you going to get, having consumed 1,000 durians, to be able to swing votes in favor of one party or another? We must remember that Tun Mahathir said it's okay to give flowers and food. This is not giving titles or cars or houses to the potential voters to swing a vote.
Yeah, and remember during G14, there was also this whole situation where people could win cash, like a lot of cash. We're talking about like 5 digits worth of cash through lucky draw, and this was during the election campaign as well.
And that was wrong. And I think the idea was that, and you know, Giri, I understand, I think the situation that you're referring to is the congratulatory gifts that were sent to Tun and his wife, and what he tried to do, recognizing people's sentiment, just said, well, okay, let's put a cap on what you send us. He wasn't asking for flowers. He said, but if you're going to send us anything, don't send us anything expensive. Yeah, maybe flowers will do. This is different, right? So this is a situation post the election when a public or state-sponsored event could be seen as an attempt to bribe voters.
I still have my reservation that, because durians are national fruit, and everybody gets hungry, everybody gets thirsty. You got a big event, and what better than to provide a nationalistic kind of emblem, which is a durian.
Okay, durians quenching thirst across the Klang Valley. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Beach House with a Used to Be. What a mellow number. I'm Shiraz Kutin. With me, Giri Balakrishnan is guest hosting this week, as well as Joyce Go. And the morning run continues. It is 51 minutes past 6 in the morning on the 26th of July. Thank you very much, Roland, for joining the conversation about durians. You say it's just durians, guys. Don't be so uptight. Samuel, John, you've also tweeted in saying durians can be a thorny issue given away at the wrong time. Nice pun there, Samuel. Okay. I guess the conversation about, you know, whether it's business as usual or if things are going to be done differently in Malaysia post May 9th.
Yeah, and we have an article out in Malay Mail recently, an op piece on how Terence Fernandez, he's questioning if there is a rise of the new little Napoleons. So what he's talking about is, you know, with Malaysia Baharu and all that, you have new ministers, new faces coming, you know, on stream. And, you know, overnight, they find themselves in position of power and influence, right? And in some situations, he's saying that, you know, some of them have an increase in size of their hits, and that seemed to have clouded their better judgment. So you know, in other words, sometimes, you know what they say, to test a man's character, give him power. And you can see how that has, you know, how that changed a person or not, yeah? So do you guys agree?
Well, no, Joyce, in this instance, we don't really know who this person is, what their role in the organization is. Either way, I don't think his role or her role, for that matter, was to go around telling people that their tenure in that organization is coming to an end.
Right, so this is not a news report. This is a column,
an op piece
by Terence Fernandez, because he's a well-known journalist, many years of experience. He's worked at revealing, he and Citizen Nadis, if you remember him from the Sun fame, they together, you know, revealing much of the shenanigans that were going on at the local...
PKFZ,
Also at the local level, local government level.
Yeah.
And so they know how things operate. And that's what I think I'm guessing where Terence, you know, story comes from, an understanding of the inner workings of government that many of us are not exposed to. Yes, you know, power is very corrupting, and it can be quite heady, as the expression used earlier, Giri, with the reference to eating too many durians, 1,000 durians. I said it was actually, you'll just burst, I think, into flames. But yeah, when it comes to power, it can get to your head very quickly, because you might not know where, you know, and this is a question of roles, right? And clarity about your role and function. Sometimes people don't have that.
Yeah, and he's saying, you know, several individuals who have just moved to their ivory towers in Putrajaya, who were once humble and media friendly, are now placing conditions on the media when it comes to interviewing and seeking to meet their bosses and all that. So yeah, you know, we don't know who he's talking about, but I guess that is happening on the ground. It you know, it's just some few bad apples in the basket.
Yeah, more than abuse of power, this seems to be a situation of assuming power. We really don't know who this person is, what their role is, and so on and so forth.
Well, you know, I do think, you know, Joyce, on the question of the media and access to it's a difficult game, right? So if you were out of power, maybe only a handful of people want to speak to you, right? So you are in the position of trying to have to sell yourself.
Yeah.
But when you're in power and you're making policy pronouncements and you have to make decisions and you're meeting other stakeholders, the media is just one of many that you have to deal with on a daily basis. So time then becomes really limited for you. So I'm actually quite sympathetic to these. It is the tone in which they take when dealing with the media, I think that's very important.
Yeah, but do you forget the people who were there for you when nobody wanted to talk to you, when nobody wanted to, like, even give you the time of the day? Do you forget that, you know?
This is just managing appointments. I think it's a job of a secretary. It's not a job of...
No, it's managing relationships. It's not just appointment. This is called managing relationships and remembering people who were there for you when nobody was there for you at that time.
Yeah, I agree with Joyce. You know, the media puts a lot of store on developing those relationships with people, whether they're in power, out of power, to get an understanding of who they are. And perhaps, you know, rightly or wrongly, the media expects some sort of payback when you do take power. Okay, we're coming up to the next bulletin of the morning, and taking us there is Coldplay with Don't Panic. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.